You know, it's a different world nowadays when it comes to fraud protection. We used to know a little bit who the shysters were, but now we don't know. And with AI, I mean, they can steal your grandmother's voice and shyst you out of money. Or it's going the other way around. They can steal a grandson or granddaughter's voice. How do you battle that? Well, education's a big part of that, right? And guess what? We have an office in Montana that focuses on that and doing a great job, as a matter of fact. There are summits out there. Hopefully you've taken part of that. There's a lot more to talk about. Insurance rates. Also, as a member of the land board, there's some public land issues always on our plate here in Montana. Yes, it is Securities and Insurance Commissioner James Brown today on Voices of Montana. Yes, we do have the King of Soul in studio today. Funky good time. That's probably not the, he's rocking to it. That's all right. He's working it. Good morning, Jim. Jim Brown again, Montana's, well, state auditor and commissioner of securities and insurance and the King of Soul in studio today. How you doing, sir?
Well, good morning. It's always a great morning to start off with the godfather of soul, James Brown. The late, great James Brown. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us, but his spirit lives on.
Yes, and I think I'm seeing more and more of this adoption of his spirit in you as well. So that's good going, Jim.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Papa got a brand new bag every morning in this James Brown's world, that's for sure.
What is going on in your world? Thanks for coming in, man. How you been?
I've been busy. Busy is the word for it. Yeah, doing a lot as state auditor. The number one statistic that I would roll out this morning is in the 15 months that I've been state auditor, our prosecutions and investigations of fraud in Montana are up 80% over the last year.
I got to get me a clap track for that. I mean, that's 80%. That's significant. And address what I'm talking about here. It's a different world nowadays when it comes to fighting fraud and how fraud is getting past us.
Yeah, well, you had a great intro there. You were talking about the AI piece.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, the fraudsters are far more sophisticated than they were even 3 years ago, and it's because of this, the use of AI. So what we're seeing as new schemes in terms of fraud are the deep fake impersonations where you were talking about, you know, we estimate that 22% of bad actors are now using AI to generate deep fake videos and clone voices of loved ones in order to commit fraud. Solicit money. This is an interesting one. There's phantom AI trading bots. Criminals are using AI powered training bots that promise guaranteed returns.
Wow.
And these are often black box scams where the algorithm and the profits do not exist. And I got a perfect example of a fraud scheme that we shut down in Montana recently, kind of related to this. You got the digital asset and crypto fraud. This is a top threat that we're seeing in Montana now. It's the number one form of fraud that's being reported to our office. This wasn't even true 2 years ago. It's just incredible. These often involve unregistered securities and vague promises of high returns in the crypto space. And then the fake AI equity pitchers, where scammers are selling stocks and companies that purportedly develop breakthrough AI models, and then they pump and dump schemes of sales of equity in companies that are entirely fictitious. I mean, it's just incredible what people come up with.
And so education is a big part of this, right? I mean, and you guys have been going out and teaching folks. What's the response? And I know you have staffers that are doing that as well as yourself. What's the public saying? Are they worried about it? Are they getting educated? Are there new tools that need to be developed in your office to combat this?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought up the staffers working on this, because one of them's in studio with us right now, my longtime friend and now my coworker, Jenna McKinney. Say hi, Jenna.
Good morning.
Yes. Well, you might recognize his voice because she has hosted this program a time or two.
I have, yeah.
Good morning, Jenna.
Thank you.
Yeah, and so you led that nicely. So we talked about this before on your show. Kind of the interesting thing when you get elected to a statewide office is you come in, you get sworn in, and then you're immediately into a legislative session of the Montana Legislature. Right. And so I inherited my predecessor's budget, Troy Downing's budget, for my office. And one of the things that I promised Montanans when I ran for the state auditor's office in 2024 is I would always put them first. And putting them first meant getting more education efforts across the state, particularly in rural Montana, in terms of the amount of fraud that's being perpetrated against Montanans. And so I asked for an additional $100,000 in spending authority from the legislature in the 25th session to send staff out, which is part of what Jenna is doing for my office, to go and have these discussions with Montanans about these fraud schemes, the amount of fraud that's going on, that Montanans are being targeted. Glad to say the legislature funded that. And we've been in every single county in the state, right, last year. So we are touching the public. And the reason I'm in town here in Billings is because I participated yesterday in the Montana Department of Justice's, the state attorney general's Elder Justice Summit that was held at the Billings Clinic. And it was a full day of meeting with folks that are interested in protecting Montanans, particularly elderly Montanans, from fraud and abuse. Great discussions that came out of that. I presented on the authority of my office in terms of fraud in the insurance arena, but also primarily in the area of securities fraud or investment fraud.
What is the authority of your office? How deep can you dig? How far can you? You can't prosecute, obviously, or maybe you can. You do have prosecutorial authority then, huh?
Yeah, so we are, I mean, that's a great question, because most people don't realize this about our office. We are a criminal justice agency, just like the Department of Justice here in Montana, except our authority is limited to the two areas that I talked about, essentially is prosecuting fraud in the insurance space and then investment fraud. I would say this is that I have four fraud investigators currently on staff, and we do a tremendous amount of work.
Brag about it. I mean, you talked about and this is what's nice about this. And I'm going to say this as well. Jim Brown in studio with us here is Montana State Auditor, but Commissioner of Securities and Insurance. And we're longtime associates, right? And I'm going to say friends, but I'm saying this just out of a sense of respect and appreciation. There are things coming out of your office, and Troy did a good job too. He kind of got that ball rolling, but you've got this office kicking. With this fraud prevention stuff, education, insurance understanding, and some prosecutions. I mean, that insurance breach with Blue Cross Blue Shield is still on our plate to talk about. But so thank you for that. Congratulations on that. I mean, that's being a public servant.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. You missed the most important connection between us is that we love the Montana Grizzlies.
That one
goes out to all my friends in the Montana Wool Growers Association, particularly you, Dave McEwen, up there in the Sweetgrass Hills, because I know you're listening.
Yeah, he made a funny face just like your staffer Jenna did, too.
Yeah, exactly, so, right. But yes, we have absolutely hit the ground running since I became auditor, and that was one of the selling points that I made, as you know, on the campaign trail when I ran for this office, is that I have a skill set that would allow me to hit the ground running for Montanans. You asked me to talk about specific examples.
Yes.
Of course, we talked about the $50 million in fraud that we identified that was being perpetrated in the Obamacare program here in Montana. We got that stopped pretty much on the front end, which was a huge savings for Montana's insurance consumers, because every dollar of fraud is a dollar that goes into your premium.
Give us the 2-minute version of that case.
Yeah. So this is horrific.
Yeah.
This is the worst of humanity. It's a perfect example of just how awful there are some people are in the world. So essentially the scheme was such that these fraudsters created these drug and alcohol treatment centers in Arizona and California. And then it's a multi-level fraud scheme because it's also a property fraud scheme at the same time. And so they buy these beautiful properties and these beautiful locations. And then what they were doing is sending recruiters up to Montana Native American reservations. And then they would recruit otherwise compromised individuals or people that actually needed drug and alcohol treatment. And then they had promised them that they would transport them down to Southern California, provide them free drug and alcohol treatment. It'd stay at a beautiful facility. But what it really turned into was a human trafficking scheme, and they weren't providing the actual treatment that they promised. And then what they were doing was billing Montana insurance companies for fraudulent or non-existent treatments. And we caught that, as I stated, pretty early. The billing patterns, we caught on at about $585,000 in payments before we got involved. And we've identified about $50 million and been able to stop, to date, $23.3 million in payments. But the interesting thing about this conversation is that because Montana is on a federal exchange for Obamacare, ultimately, the feds have the authority to approve or disapprove our request for non-payment. I don't have control over that. It's very frustrating. We did all the criminal background work and all the investigation, referred it up to the feds, and we're still waiting for them to approve about $20 million in blocking these payments.
Wow. And how does AI help you in things like this? When you talked about identifying early, you know, and there are other instances I want to have you talk about here too, where, you know, banks and financial institutions can play a role, but it's probably a pretty tricky thing to get them to play the appropriate role in fraud prevention.
Well, we find Montana's financial institutions to be a great partner in this fight.
Great.
The beauty of living in our state is, you know, we are a small state, and we are still very close as Montanans. We consider each other neighbors still. I mean, it's changing a little bit, as you know, as the demographic is changing. But, you know, this isn't California. This isn't Minnesota, where we have these huge fraud schemes, and it's all impersonal. We work with our financial institutions to educate them as to what to look for in these fraud schemes. They have the authority to put a 48-hour block on any transaction that they think might be fraudulent in order to reach out to the customer to say, hey, this might be fraud, or to contact a loved one of someone who might, they think, being taken advantage of. But unfortunately, the way the law works is that these financial institutions are required after 48 hours to release the money, even if they think it's a fraudulent. But we encourage them to reach out to us to, you know, let us know that they believe that fraud has happened so that we can look into it and prosecute it. You know, the other really amazing thing is that because Montana is so small, we have Montanans reach out to our office every day to say, hey, you know, there could be some kind of impropriety happening here. Another case that we just finished, this is really interesting. This is the whole Brave New World economy. We had a company out of Delaware that was operating a Bitcoin mining operation up in Columbia Falls. And it started out as a legitimate business, but it quickly turned into a multi-level fraudulent marketing schemes. And what they were encouraging Montanans to do was to invest in these computer systems that essentially allowed you to mine Bitcoin from your home. But what it turned out to be was that they took off with all the investors' money, and then you didn't get anything from all the work that you had done for them in mining the Bitcoin. And so we were just able to procure $190,000 in restitutions for Montana that had been the victim of this fraud scheme. We worked with the federal government on this, and the way that we were actually able to get the restitution was by selling the actual physical property in Columbia Falls, but a big win for Montana.
You know, and there's so much involved in this. I love hearing you talk about it because it's not an A to B kind of direction in fraud prevention. And you got a text message here. We'll take a break. James Brown is with us, Montana Commissioner of Securities and Insurance, state auditor as well. This is from Joy in Helena. Joy, thanks for texting in. Presentation of Jim's program regarding scams, A+, with great info and learning how and what to watch for protection. We learned a lot of insight at his presentation last week. And so listen and learn that is great to get that kind of feedback, because that's the goal, right? Is to get people educated so this does not happen. On the lookout, AI scams. I mean, they're kind of frightening us in a lot of ways, but education, I think, helps. And we're talking about that here today. Welcome back from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. James Brown is with us. Jim Brown's the Montana Commissioner of Securities and Insurance, also our state auditor. We'll talk some land board things. I got insurance on the plate here as well, Jim. I'm looking at the Daniels County Leader, and thank you guys up there for sending that to me. Fraud Workshop, March 12th. So this was a little while ago in Daniels Sheridan Federal Credit Union there. And we just heard from Joy and Jim. Your staffer, Jenna, was there, as a matter of fact. So Jenna, tell us what these workshops are, what you're trying to get across, and the kind of feedback you're getting too.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm glad to be here with you, Tom. It's fun to be in studio
again. Right?
Yeah. So I travel for the commissioner doing fraud presentations across the state. Last week, I was in Daniels County. I was I overnighted in Glasgow from being in Grass Range up to Scobie, and did a fraud presentation in Grass Range there, talking to locals about what's going on. But the presentation itself is intended to inform you on some of the data points, just so you're aware of the professionalization of fraud and how it's impacting us rurally in Montana. We feel a bit isolated in certain ways. We've always had that, and we do not have that anymore with technology and how it's advancing, and then in conjunction with the professionalization of fraudulent activity. Mm-hmm. So Montanans are very vulnerable. One, we're just very neighborly and charitable.
That's very true.
Yeah, and then we're isolated. So bringing this message to local communities, I think, educates them. I always try to dispel the shame in talking about the professionalization of fraud, because they are very predatory on our just the human condition. They know how to, give you hope and fear, and they're very good at it. So encouraging people to reach out to our agency and talk about what's going on for them, and dispelling that shame component that maybe limits what we might hear. So I try to get people talking about it. I share the data points. We work, as the commissioner mentioned, we work with the feds on a variety of ways. But one of the points we talk about is the four P's. We talk about how to just be aware of a fraud scheme. And I think that's helpful, especially to the 60-plus generation, in what's going on with technology and mm-hmm. how the fraudsters are engaging them. So we just bring awareness and then outreach and educating what the agency's role is. It's widely unknown. I think the auditor's office title can be confusing when we are right. criminal justice and consumer protection oriented agency. So bringing awareness of what the agency does, that we're there for the communities as a resource. And yeah, the commissioners had that mission. Like he said, we've been longtime friends. We both really have that heart for public service. And so I'm really honored to be in this role for the commissioner, and I get to travel this great state and meet lots of great people. And I had the MVD scam that was out last week on text.
Yeah.
Every single stop, whether I'm with 25 people in Grass Range or up in Scobie, I'm hearing about what's going on in these communities. So it's good work. It's important to the people of Montana. And yeah, I'm honored to be on the road for the commissioner.
Jenna McKinney once again, and James Brown in the studio. CSIMT.gov for more information. And, they're out there. So if you want them in your community, reach out there. Again, it's Jenna McKinney. And there's going to be a schedule. And this is ongoing as well. So education is a big part of it, Jim. How do we, cut the head of this snake off?
Yeah, and this is exactly what I'm trying to do, is through the education piece to make sure that people aren't victims in the first instance, because that's the key.
Yeah.
Just be aware of the amount of fraud that is now being attempted against Montanans. Make sure you understand the methods of fraud that they're using to try to get people to send them money, because we want to prevent it on the front end in order to, because it's very difficult for us to get the money back once it's been sent. And this is particularly true in what we're talking about with the cryptocurrency and the digital asset space. Most of the bad actors that are in this space are foreign nationals. They're not American citizens. Right. And so from our criminal jurisdiction at the agency, I mean, we're not going to be able to haul somebody from China, North Korea, or Vietnam to Montana to prosecute them. So just don't be a victim on the front end.
Does that have to change? Are there international organizations that are looking at, because it's happening in America. We're a pretty prosperous country. It's happening elsewhere as well, but we are targeted day in and day out.
There's no doubt. Yeah. I mean, we talked about this off air, Tom, but it's good to bring it on air. The FTC reported just the level a fraud that's happening and what a problem it is. I mean, it's just growing and growing. FTC reported fraud losses in 2024 of $12.5 billion in this country. $12.5 billion with a B. It's astounding. Consumers reported losing the most to investment scams at $5.7 billion, and that's in keeping with what I was talking about mm-hmm. earlier. This is what our agency is seeing, is that the investment scams, particularly in the digital currency space, are overtaking every other form of fraud. So to answer your question about what can be done on the criminal side, This was part of the trick with the Obamacare fraud that we're seeing, right? So the targeted victims were Native Americans, which are, as you know, either under tribal jurisdiction or federal jurisdiction. There's no state jurisdiction over them, so there's nothing I can do to prosecute. Plus, they were transporting them across state lines into California, Arizona, which makes it a federal matter, so we can only make criminal referrals to the feds to prosecute. Okay, and then for the international ones, we report these up to the FBI and say, you know, we've determined that this money got sent to a wallet in, you know, San Jose, California, and then from there, it looks like it went overseas. You know, the FBI, the federal government, U.S. Department of Justice then work with Interpol, which is the international police, to try to bring these guys to justice. But you can imagine what they're really looking at is, you know, they're not looking at a fraud scheme of $1.2 million, which is a lot of money. But what they're looking at is $120 million or $1.2 billion of fraud when they're going to go after international actors.
Yeah. And you know, and this comes on top of what we're learning about the hidden fraud or the almost, it's almost planted and organized fraud in our country that some journalists are uncovering. Minnesota's a great example. California's another. And if you're following Nick Sherry, he's, again, there was a building in California dilapidated and it was receiving some $15 million a year. So that's a different aspect here too, but that's money going out the door. And I consider that fraud, but it's not a consumer. Well, or is it? I mean, I guess the question I'm leading to is how many offices, and I know that you hold a leadership position in this national organization. Talk about that. How many offices out there are fighting fraud as hard as they can, as hard as they can?
Yeah, well, as you stated, I'm a member of two national organizations, one on the insurance side where I meet with the insurance regulators, and then one on the investment side. It's called NASA, ironically enough, this national organization, not the space program. But it's pretty confusing. There's two A's in this one. This is our number one focus on the national level with this NASA group. I'll be going to Washington, D.C. first week of May to meet with my fellow regulators in the securities area, and fraud and fraud prevention, particularly in the digital currency space, is the number one topic on our agenda. And we work together, as you can imagine, to communicate the types of fraud schemes that we're seeing, that so we can identify them across state lines. But, you know, the amount of fraud that is happening, what it does is it undermines the confidence in our currencies, number one, but also two, in our financial payment systems. And that in itself is extremely problematic, as you can imagine.
Yeah. I just got a minute and a half here. There is at least a small restitution fund, right? Maybe hit on that a little bit.
Yeah. So this is, thank you for bringing this up. So Montana, we take care of ourselves. That's the beauty of living in the Treasure State. So the legislature made the wise decision about 15 years ago to authorize my agency to have a restitution fund to provide a mechanism for people that have, Montanans that have been defrauded in the securities arena, to get some measure of payment back when they have been defrauded. We are only one of six states in the United States that has one of these funds. It makes us pretty unique in that regard. Unfortunately, the maximum that we can provide in a restitution, in an individual restitution case, is $50,000. The average, I want your listeners to think about this. The average loss that we're seeing on these crypto scams and investment scams is $176,000.
Yeah.
And so you're going to get maybe a third of what you invested.
But that, I think that helps a lot on the emotional end of things as well, that there's some support out there. And as Jenna had noted, there is a part of this is a roadblock about, oh, I'm so embarrassed I let myself get caught like this. But like you guys are saying, this is sophisticated. This is professional scam. Boy, there's a lot of times that fastest hour, I wish it would slow down a little bit. We've got one of them here. Jim Brown is in studio, our Montana Commissioner of Securities and Insurance and State Auditor. More information. They're doing a lot of fraud protection. We spent a fair amount of time on that because it is a big issue. And there's help out there, okay? CSIMT.gov. Get educated, but also let's prosecute these snakes, so to speak. Welcome back to From Montana for Montana. Voices of Montana. $23 million in potential losses prevented in a single insurance intervention. We're going to move a little bit here now into the insurance realm because there's been some breakthroughs, I think, in that in the state of Montana. One of them kind of noted here, some large potential losses for people that you prevented or helped prevent. Talk about that case.
So
insurance rates, right?
Yeah. So it's a little different twist than, say, a loss. What we do, this is a great question because people don't understand what my actual authority is as the state commissioner of insurance in terms of denying rates or approving rates. Yeah. And so this is a good education piece. So insurance companies that operate in Montana have to submit their proposed premium rates for their policies to our office. We review those under a three-part test. One is the rate excessive? Two, is the rate discriminatory? And then this is the one that I think surprises a lot of people, is the rate too low? And why we look at that is we want to make sure that the company isn't going to go bankrupt and harm their policyholders, right?
Gotcha, yes.
So what people don't understand, and I get this question a lot, either out on the road or just communications to the office, they're like, well, why didn't you disapprove my 25% rate increase on my Med Sup plan? Okay. The answer to that is I don't have the authority to do that. What I do have the authority from the legislature to do is to make sure that the rates that are being proposed are what are known as actuarially sound. In other words, they're justified by the evidence that's being provided by the insurance company. This is another consumer protection piece that I do as the state auditor. I'm very pleased to announce on the air that in 2025, my office denied about $22 million in unjustified rate increases that had been presented to us that was going to be imposed on everyday Montanans. And just in the month of 2026 alone, we denied $1.4 million in unjustified insurance rate increases. And so we do, this is a different aspect of the consumer protection work we do.
Overall insurance, you're not a stranger to this, right? University of Montana, and then your law school degree came from, I'm trying to remember.
University of Washington.
Washington, yeah. Where are we at with insurance? I have such a rough time processing how much money I pay for it, compared to the value I get out of it personally, but I know that is only really a small part of the overall mechanism of insurance in our country. Give us that 101 that helps us understand where it's going and why it's valuable to us.
Yeah, and I'm glad you started with my credentials there, because one of the things that I talked about when I ran for this office is I'm pretty uniquely qualified to serve in this office, because not only did I have the law degree, which I still do, of course, but I also had an insurance producer's license. Yeah. And so actually a license in the field that I was regulating, which gave me a leg up. What we're seeing in Montana, and all your listeners are going to know this from when they receive their policies quotes for 2026, is that insurance rates are climbing in Montana. And that's an unfortunate reality. There's several factors that are involved with this. One is that it's pretty clear, talking to my team, that insurance companies had been undercharging, if you will, for many years in Montana, and so the rates are catching up. But the other thing we talked about, the AI piece, is insurance companies are getting way more sophisticated in being able to rate individual risk, particularly in terms of homeowners insurance or property insurance, because of the tools that they can have to actually look at your property and see what the risks are associated with that. I mean, this is kind of Orwellian, to be honest with you, but it's the reality of it. And insurance companies are being way more careful about insuring, particularly against wildfire risk, after the tremendous losses that these companies have experienced in Florida through the hurricanes or California because of the wildfire. And billions and billions of dollars in losses, right?
Preventable losses in a lot of ways.
Certainly the LA fire 2025, we know that was poor land management and city policy.
More than just poor, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Criminal almost.
But, my job as tasked by the legislature is to ensure that there's adequate competition in the Montana insurance market in order to ensure that we know the competition keeps drives down prices or keeps prices reasonable, right? That's where you get into the monopoly-esque that you really see exploding rates. And so part of my task is to create a regulatory environment that is conducive to companies either staying in Montana to offer insurance or trying to get them to come into Montana. And that's actually part of my job, is when I go to these national meetings for on the insurance side of this, is I'll actually meet with industry reps, you know, of insurance companies and talk about, you know, Montana is a good place to do business. So I'm also, in a way, a salesman for the state of Montana to try to encourage business here to help Montana consumers. Yeah, it's an interesting job, right? But where we're really seeing the highest increases is in terms of homeowners insurance because of the perceived wildfire risk. Most of the losses in terms of fire in Montana have happened since the year 2000. You can point to reasons for that, but the two big ones that I come to is we have more Montanans now because people are moving to the state and the new people are building into the wildland urban interface, which has high fire risk. So we're seeing more losses in that regard. And then the thing that people don't think about is, as we know, it's becoming more expensive to live in the state, including to buy a home. Well, insurance prices are based on replacement value. Okay. And one of the frustrations that's given to me when I go out and talk to folks is folks will say, well, I bought my house in 1980, you know, for $85,000. And my house is now being valued at, you know, $800,000. And so they're getting the double whammy of one, increased property taxes based on the value because of the property value is increasing here. But the piece that people don't think about is the replacement value of the house is not what you bought it for in 1980. It's what the value is now. And so that the insurance companies are insuring for a higher type value. The only good news that I can really give in terms of not only me denying unjustified rate increases is that what we are seeing, which is interesting, is that in the auto insurance arena, the policies that and premiums are being submitted right now to my office for 2027, because it's basically a year ahead process, is that auto rates are going to go down in Montana in 2027. So I'm going to glad to give some good news, at least in that regard.
There's some more good news. One's not good news, but you've been investigating this. The Blue Cross Blue Shield had a data breach. But there's also a recent court case which ruled in favor of a legislative bill that's going to hopefully create reality when it comes to what liability insurance is. Maybe get into those a little bit here, please.
Yeah. So
in 5 minutes or less, right? Yeah.
I'm working on some major issues right now. This is a really interesting job. I love it. I'm having a great time because it just appeals to my policy.
And you're doing a good job.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I feel like I am too. But the Blue Cross Blue Shield. So I'm sure everybody's seen this because they've received a notice from Blue Cross Blue Shield because 470,000 Montanans were affected by this data breach. What happened was is that one of their third party vendors had all the data of Blue Cross Blue Shield's customers, including former customers. They got breached, and the personal data of Montanans got compromised. And what the infuriating thing for me was is that Blue Cross Blue Shield did not report to us as their regulator for over a year that this breach had happened, right? Yeah. And they didn't send out notices to Montana's their data had been breached until I came unglued on them and said, you are required by law to provide the timeliest notice of these breaches, and why did you wait a year? So we are investigating them with the idea of doing it administrative proceedings to see what kind of liability they have, but they have sued me. They have sued me in a state district court in Helena to stop my investigation. We had the hearing. We're just waiting the judge's order to see whether or not I can actually do my consumer protection function. Unbelievable.
It is. And I don't know. I mean, that's lawfare, right? And we've seen a lot of people gravitate to that quite a bit. So there's a resolution pending still. The case is still ongoing. And that's when do you have a deadline? Or is there going to be a ruling here on that?
Well, the judge stated verbally, I went and sat at the hearing and watched it, of course, that he would try to get a decision out as soon as possible. But that was February, and we're almost halfway into March. So I'm hoping that comes out soon so we can either proceed or not proceed. But if we're not allowed to proceed, I'm going to go to the legislature in 27 and make sure that I have the ability to regulate insurance companies and their data breaches.
Kind of like these the song selection. You should come back more often, Jim. We're grooving it pretty well here on a Wednesday morning. That is the real James Brown. He's James Brown. We got Jim Brown in studio here. Thanks for coming in too. Appreciate that. Good stuff, Cody. Just lightning round here, Jim, and I want to talk. You're also you've got some chops, insurance chops and legal chops, And you also have some egg chops as well. Your family grew up in the Dillon area. You guys are still ranching and as an active producer there as well. So when we talk about you as a member of the land board, you've got background to understand some of these issues. The thing that I see on my plate right now, as we talked about earlier on Monday, in an initiative coming out of Oregon, but it could impact all of us eventually, IP-28, the idea behind it is to try and restrict, hunting and fishing, and also it's going to tremendously impact egg production if it gets passed. With that threat, give us a sense of how we balance our love for public lands, the resource that it is for our communities as well, and then those groups out there that are looking to change things that in my mind, ulterior agendas.
Yeah, you're right. I was very fortunate to, grow up in Montana. I grew up in the Dillon area.
That had to be fun, right?
Dillon's great. Yeah. I love my hometown. Yeah. Fourth generation Montana. My great-grandfather homesteaded Grasshopper Valley, 1880s. Long association with Bannock, Montana, as you know, the first territorial capital. Have relatives buried all over Beaverhead County. But the great thing about growing up in Beaverhead County is that it gave me a lot of background to be a really good public servant, and particularly in the area of production agriculture and understanding what the value of public land is and the purpose for which it was set aside in the Montana Constitution. And that's a good place to start. So as you stated, I serve on the land board. It's the five constitutional officers. We are tasked under the Montana Constitution to manage state trust lands for the benefit of Montana schools, and for the benefit, by that I mean to raise revenue to fund education in Montana. And what's really cool about the land board situation and state trust lands is not only is it in the Montana Constitution, it's even got a higher protection level because it's actually set forth in the compact between the state of Montana and Congress when Montana became a state, which gives it even higher priority than a constitutional protection.
Interesting.
Yeah, it really is. And so the idea, of course, is to raise revenue for schools. We raised about $80 million in 2025 for Montana public education. But these lands were set aside for production, right? Whether it's production agriculture, whether it's oil and gas exploration, whether it's now with the growth in Montana, with the parcels of, 16 and 36 that now find itself within city limits, like in Bozeman or Kalispell. We just approved a project, for example, up in the Kalispell area where we leased it, that section out for a commercial enterprise, right?
Oh, okay.
And so, but it's production side. So it's one of the reasons I ran for the state auditor's office was to get on the land board because of my background with agriculture. And I mentioned that, as you know, that I represented the Wool Growers Association for many years in Montana, and we dealt with the land
still,
board.
Still do, as a matter of fact, just off the cuff.
That's right. Yeah, I still champion their interests, I'd say that, but just not get paid for it.
We got 1 minute. I'm sorry we ran out of time.
So, but the thing that I wanted to talk about is that the APR, the Attorney General and I did a great motion at the February land board meeting that basically told the APR, because they had lost their their permits to run on BLM land because they are running wild bison, which violates the Taylor Grazing Act. They sent us a letter saying, we're just going to move our bison onto state trust lands, and that's where we're going to feed them. We made a motion, the Attorney General and I said, no, you're not. Not without our approval and not without the improper environmental reviews and not without the proper fencing.
Yeah, and I think that's vital too, because we're seeing interests that take us away from production, and we already have market conditions that is taking productive land away from us as well. So it's vital. Jim Brown. I'm running out of time. Education summits. The fraud summits continue on. It's csimt.gov. Get signed up. Get educated about that. Prevent that from happening. Jim, be well. Thank you for coming
in, sir. It's great to be on.
Jenna, good to see you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.